Blog Talk Radio.
Technical difficulties. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Double Helix on Late Night Poets, part of allpoetry.com. Dexter, are you with me?
Yeah, happy birthday, Faziana.
Thank you.
How are you?
Pretty good. I just had an earth and sky massage where they like do your feet and your head, and it's just like super relaxing, so I'm a little bit like sleepy now, but good.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to celebrate your birthday.
I thought
like
so.
Sounds amazing, actually. I'm kind of jealous. No, so no, but sounds like you had a good day. Happy birthday. And it would be a great way to celebrate. I'm a little sleepy myself, too. I got to wake up here and have a cookie or something.
Well, maybe Pam can wake us up. Hi, Pam.
Hey, I don't know about that. I just woke up from a nap. But, well, maybe the three of us together will somehow manage.
Yeah.
Maybe at the middle of the total, suddenly hear, like, the three of us, like, snoring in sync.
Yeah.
I was just saying, it would be good business for the massage place if they let you, like, have, like, a sleep room there. Like, I'll pay an extra little bit to just be able to, like, chill there after the massage.
Oh, that's
there you go.
That is a good idea. Yes, and very happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, it's going to be a great night of poetry. I'm glad we're on. We're going to keep each other awake. We're going to make this happen, and I'm excited about it.
Me too. And happy anniversary, so, Dex. I'm so sorry I missed our last show. Belated anniversary.
That's okay. It's
for
okay.
those of
who missed it,
you
had a good reason.
Like me. Huh? Last show 2 weeks ago was our anniversary of doing the shows, the show Double Helix. But it was stormy here, and I had no internet or power. I missed it, but you two did a wonderful job. I was listening to it yesterday. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we got through it when Ron called, so it was a fun night. So, but I'm excited for this night. There's no storms or nothing like that, so you might as well explain to some of the prompts that we got.
Sure. Okay, so my contest is It's My Party, and I'll cry if I want to. I was having a bit of a little, midlife crisis about this birthday. I'm turning 36, which is not super old, but it's late 30s suddenly feels like I should have my life together in ways that I don't. So that's sort of the theme of the contest. The first prompt is, youth would be an ideal state if it came a little later in life, which is Hubert Asquith. Prompt two was, write about your worst or your best birthday. Prompt three is, after 30, a body has a mind of its own, Bette Midler. Prompt four is, middle age is when you're sitting at home on a Saturday night and the telephone rings and you hope it isn't for you, Ogden Nash. And five is, write about the most important thing that you learned in your late 30s. So it's going to be a bit of a mix of things, kind of inspired by my freaking out about my birthday. So we'll see how people responded. I got a few private messages of you're not that old or but and I know like I said in the contest, growing old is a privilege. I was quite ill for a while, and I didn't know if I'd get to be old. So it's actually, it's a positive thing to get old. I don't mind being old. I just want to have my shit together as appropriate for my age. That's all. I'm sorry. Yeah. Pardon my language.
You're okay. It's your birthday. You can swear if you want to.
I suppose so. Actually, nobody wrote to the first.
Is our next song. It's My Birthday, and I'll swear if I want to.
Yes. We'll make a parody version of it. Let's
there
do it.
Go,
yeah.
It's my party, and I'll swear if I want to. Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Sadly, nobody wrote to the first prompt, which I thought was going to be a fun one. But the second prompt... not the second prompt. The third prompt did. After 30, a body has a mind of its own. So, Dex, I'm going to get you to read this one by Peter Solway.
Okay. All right. This is Tell Me About It by Peter Solway. Arthritis, when you tree to tip. Spalling and grandma up and sput and out, up the sput and out. Oh, the telly to send me to sleep, better than pills, sesame sheep. Dream of an easy death, farewell. Big ship out the harbor, fire in archive store. Larkin the librarian, a deserter. Memories, my memories, are gained with bouncing breasts. Aladdin love, Aphrodite, past central, the carnal so essential. Old man with now, fishing with Neil Young, What a name, man. Wrinkled with love's credentials, spanning a whack of time, orbits circling, moons the same, oh sacred habits, Marie's breasts, Joseph's ass. End poem. Great piece here, Peter. Let's start off with Pam for comments, if we could.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there. I definitely see in those first two stanzas the idea of the things that happen to the mind and the body, you know, when you start to get older, the arthritis, the idea, the falling asleep. I like that. Oh, the telly to send me to sleep better than pills. I actually can really relate to that one because when I was a kid and we lived with my grandma, she would watch the news, only she would fall asleep and she would be snoring. And we try to change the channel to something we liked. And all of a sudden her eyes would pop open and she'd be like, I'm watching that. It's like, no, we weren't. It's interesting how suddenly, it's almost like I think what happens is the person falls asleep and then slips into the dream of when they were younger. You know, when, you know, those ideas of, you know, when they could flirt and, you know, watch those bouncing breasts and know they had a chance of getting the woman. Aladdin Love, Aphrodite Path Central, this carnal so essential, old man with now fishing with Neil Young. I like that he brought up Neil Young because of the song, you know, that Neil Young sings, Old Man. I thought that was a really clever reference there. So just a great write to me on the whole idea of those things that we look back on when we become older. So excellent write.
I agree. Faziana, what did you think about this one?
I liked the line Sesame Sheep because it's like, I think it's a play on Sesame Street. It's, you know, like some, the kids show, but it'd be on TV kind of putting you to sleep. But also like counting sheep to fall asleep. But then also the idea of us, you know, being sheep, just watching the TV. So Sesame Sheep feels like it has multiple meanings, and I always enjoy that in Peter's writes because he can put so much into like a simple two-word line, and yet I embed it in a way that it feels like it could mean so much. The librarian part made me laugh because I am a librarian, so Larkin the librarian, a deserter, like abandoned, and then her gait with the bouncing breast. Is this supposed to be me? No, the person in his past. That is just funny. And then the Neil Young thing, I also enjoyed that. What a name, man. I'm young, but he's an older singer, and it's just, I liked the wrinkled with love credentials. That's a really great line. Oh, sacred habits. And I feel like that works in multiple ways, too, because there's, like, the habits that we get over time as we age, but it's also habits as in, like, nun's habit, the headpiece, I think, because then it's talking about Mary and Joseph, religious figures, although it's sexualizing them. So it's, like, a twist on those habits, I think. It's always a bit of a mystery with Peter's rights because he puts so much thought into, like, I think every word in his pieces, that everything means something, and I always feel like I'm at risk of missing so much.
Yeah, great comment. I just got so tripped out. Now just scrambling the words back. You know, when Pam said old man Neil Young, I went, well, he says old man with now, I went, old man with Neil Young fishing with now. orbits the same, or moon circling, you know, here, better than cheap sesame pills, dream of an easy farewell, all pain of death. And I don't know, I just started scrambling his words around. it was like making a poem in its own. It's almost like the ends of the poems could go in the first half of the previous line. But it's an interesting write that he has, as always. What I like is Fire and Archive Store. When I hear that, I just think of, you know, things that are just gone forever, you know, and maybe that's in the memories, the memory banks of us. You know, it's just, I really enjoyed this poem, as always with Peter. And maybe you can find a hidden meaning if you read it backwards. I don't know, but I think that this is a fantastic write.
We have a new caller who I'm guessing is Tom. That's just like my crystal ball of guess. Who's with us?
Yeah, you're guessing well.
Yay!
Not
Not welcome.
Welcome, Tom. Good guess. Well,
would you like
to comment on that last one? Did you get a chance to read it?
I was reading it. I was reading it over because you made the comment about old man and Neil Young, and I immediately started having the words of the song that he sings with old man start running through my brain, and I'm sure he intended that to happen.
Yeah.
Look at me now. And somehow that fits with the arthritis, especially since I'm an old man fighting all those things. Goes with the age. So some of this just made me laugh. I mean, the ending with Marie's breasts and Joseph's ass, it reminds me too much of growing up in Catholic neighborhoods, and I'm nothing but a good Quaker and a friend. My father's favorite joke, by the way. People go, oh, you live in such a neighborhood? Oh, are you Catholic? And you go, no, we're just friends. You don't get it.
Great.
Society of Friends, Quakers.
Oh. Okay. There's a little breakup. I don't know what happened. So, but I get you now.
And things like that pop into my head when I'm reading Peter Soloway. Because, oh, the telly just sent me asleep. How many times have you woke? I mean, back in the days when it actually had a beginning and an end, and you'd be halfway through some movie and fall asleep and wake up to the big eye and the buzzing sound or to the jets flying around at home. We don't get that anymore. I told my son about that, and he said me like I lost my mind.
Yeah. Well, no, we don't get that anymore. You're exactly right. Great comment there, Tom, and thank you for joining us here tonight for Faziana's birthday. We'll have a good celebration. Faziana, why don't you bring us to our next piece?
All right. There's one by James George. Pam, would you read that for us?
I would be happy to. All right. And this is Survivor Man by James George. At 35, I felt alive and signed to run a marathon. I practiced every day, running a minimum of 5 miles. I ran around the island and to the yacht club and back home where I did a cool down routine, lifting my knee high, stepping in place. Then all of a sudden, something snapped. I had to lie down. I went inside to rest, after which I lost my appetite and preferred to sleep. In a fetal position, I stayed for a day and could not eat, nor could I rest. I crawled out to drive to the island doctor and barely made it in the lobby to register. Unable to fill out the forms, the doctor came out where I lay on the floor, and he diagnosed my ruptured appendix. He shut the clinic and drove me to the nearest hospital where they administered anesthesia and said, he may not make it. I raised my hand. Yes, I will. No time to debate. And in the OR, I went and came out fighting for my life. End poem.
Wow. What a piece here. Great read there also, Pam. Tom, can we start with you on comments?
You know, this really speaks, to feeling like we're younger than we are in some ways, and yet in some ways finding out that we're older than we like to realize. At 35, especially 35, when, you know, the age is somewhere between 30 and 50 where we really are getting old, but you don't realize it yet. and he captures this all so nicely. Lifting my knee high, stepping in a place, and all of a sudden something snapped. I had a friend who had his Achilles tendon snap, and his comment was, the doctor looked at me and said, you know, you didn't have to be playing basketball. You could have just stepped off a curb and it would have gone. You never know. The fetal position, and I stayed for a day and could not eat nor could I rest. I mean, toughing it out, it just captures some of the sort of classic notes of that age and the way that you resist having to really acknowledge.
Yep.
So when you get to that last verse, it really strikes home. I mean, and that's very artfully done.
Great comment there, Tom. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and what oddly, I didn't Achilles tendon, but I'd had a partial tear of my calf this year, and I was playing doorway basketball. Talk about feeling like you're getting old or whatever. I was playing doorway basketball with special needs kids, and I just went up on my tippy toes, and I just felt it snap in the back of my leg. And I had to go to the urgent care immediately from just shooting a little mini basketball. But, yeah, I was thinking the whole time, too, I'm like, dang, you know, this guy's doing a lot better than I am. And then it ended the way I probably would have ended if I was running 5 miles a day right now. You know, this, but it's definitely a piece of fighting. You know, they're, like you said, the body's feeling a certain way, but the mind and the spirit, you know, there's definitely a fight to live. And I don't necessarily know if maybe that goes away eventually at some point. But, you know, I think that at the time frame where he's talking about, you know, you definitely have some different battles. And a lot of it is mentally, What, say it again, Tom?
The different realizations really have to occur.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And you have these battles mentally, and you find out really sometimes how strong you are. Like when he says, yes, I will. You know, when you find out how strong you are when you have no choice but to be strong, or whatever the quote is. So I thought that this was a great write and very well done. Let's go, Pam. What did you think about this?
Yeah, it is a great write. I like that he wrote a true life experience that he had at, you know, the age of 35, because I think that fits perfectly with this show. You know, I like that it starts out with the idea that he's all gung-ho to prove that, his body can still function and, you know, he can run those marathons. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's the you know, something goes wrong with the knee, and then all. And I like that he leads us up to the diagnosis of the ruptured appendix, which, you know, it's scary. But most of the time, you know, ruptured appendix, if you live somewhere near a hospital, you know, they can get you in pretty quickly. It's scary, but not as scary as I imagine it was in this experience, where he was on an island and, you know, had to go a little farther, I'm guessing, to the nearest hospital. You know, there is a definitely an idea of how powerful the human will can be, you know, that he would, you know, I raise my hand, yes, I will, you know, in the response to the doctor saying he may not make it. And the fact that he was already going under anesthesia, it feels like almost like it was the subconscious talking, the strength of the spirit talking, and, you know, that realization that, you know, you have to sometimes fight to live. And so excellent write and very well done.
Comment there, Pam. And Aphasiana, you have last comment and take us to the next piece.
All right. So I relate to this pretty deeply because I've spent a lot of my adult life in the hospital off and on for various things, like serious things. And I've had several doctors act like I'm either not going to live because I was told that I probably wouldn't live until I was 30, and I'm 36. So I'm like, ha-ha, every time I
show you. There you go.
And then other doctors who thought, like, I was just not going to get better or, like, you know, even if I was going to be stable, I wasn't going to improve. And I'm very stubborn. And that part at the end where he's like, yes, I will, that was me. And they were like, there's no point in physiotherapy. I'm like, I'm going. There's no point in, like, I can't even remember what it's called. There's some kind of, like, mental rehabilitation thing. And I was like, yes, I will. And so I just did it, despite them saying there's no point. And I'm a lot better than they said I'd be. So I share his little, yes, I will, fighting spirit there. And I think this is suitable. It is that feeling of, like, your body can surprise you, and you know, when you think that you're still young and full of life, which I don't know if I've ever felt that way, mentally you think that, you know, you're invincible, and then your body takes you by surprise sometimes, even though you're not quite old yet, and you have to, you know, keep up that mental youth as long as you can.
Exactly. And so why are you pissed off about turning 36 when they said that you'd never be 30? Sounds like a win to me.
I'm not mad about being old. I'm mad that I wasted my 20s and 30s being too sick to be a 20 or 30-year-old. Like, you know, I didn't get to be wild or have a family or, you know, get the stuff together that I thought that I would by now. So I want those years back. I want to have my 20s and 30s.
I can see that. Well, we're going to get as wild as we can here tonight. So here we go. All right, bring us to the next one, whatever you got lined up for.
Okay. First of all, I should check. Tom and Pam, did you have something that you'd like to read?
All the way to very
Okay.
You see mine?
So,
it's down there.
Oh, where is it? See it. Yeah, I got to refresh. Just a second. Refreshing. My computer is almost as old as I am. Not really, but it's acting like
That would make you feel old if you actually had a computer as old as you. Now talk about making you feel old.
Oh, that would make me feel young, actually, because computers are not that old.
Well, you know what? You know what I find great at 72, being able to look at 65 and going, "How are you doing today, young man?"
Yeah, there you go.
We're looking at a woman who's 65 and going, "How are you doing today, young lady?" They like that.
Yep.
I had a kid tell me that Blink-182 was classic rock, and I just about, you know, moved into a nursing home.
Death Records and Sun Records songs are remembering when I heard them on the radio. Yep. I remember being in eighth grade and seeing the very first Beatles album come out before they were on Ed Sullivan, which was on a and a girl telling me how great they were. That was 1963. I was in eighth grade. Big hit.
So you've been there, done that, huh, Tom?
If you want to get old, well, I'll give you whiskers.
There you go.
Tom, I put your poem up.
Did you find my four ways of looking at water?
I did. Yep.
When I should read it?
Whenever you're ready.
That's the scary part. Four ways of looking at a river. A handful of water makes five. One, quiet provides opportunity. Silence fills the soul. A riverbed is only a memory. Two, they were quiet, not knowing where to start. Once the floodgates opened, she didn't have the heart to make the river of words stop. Three, still the river dies. Broad blanket of water appears not to move. Boats, debris, everything is taken to the sea. Four, the American language confuses me. Too many rules with too many exceptions. Too many poets with license to break everything. I was born to this confusion, have been told it is my native tongue. It feels like a river that changes beds when it rains. I guess all that matters is we flow to the same understanding sea. End poem.
Great piece, Thomas, and thank you for bringing this to us. Faziano, why don't we start with you on comments?
I think this had a beautiful flow to it, and I really like the way that it's broken into the sections. The thing about the language constantly changing is definitely true. I mean, I've witnessed that in the time, since I've graduated from school, just like I work with youth, and the slang changes so much. You know, every couple of years, it's like I'm having trouble keeping up with it. I used to be like the young person on my staff who like knew what people were talking about, and I'm not anymore. And I'm like, oh no, I have to try to understand and like use the right words in my like advertising to teens, because it's just like I'm lame. I don't know. I think I'm trying to be like that, like out of date. I'm totally out of date. I really like when it says I've told it's my native tongue. So it's like, even if it's your language that it's supposed to be like what you speak, it is constantly evolving, and you know, even within like different social circles, language is used differently. There's so many different like dialects depending on where you are. This is what's thought provoking for me because I'm fascinated by language and how it changes. But I really love the metaphors. It feels like a river that changes beds when it rains. I guess all that matters is we flow to the same understanding sea. That is such a beautiful ending there. I love it.
Your commentary, Faziana. Yeah, I enjoyed this piece quite a bit. And, I really love the title, Four Ways of Looking at a River, a Handful of Water Makes Five. And when you talk about that, river stops or whatever, a river never dies, but you know, in a handful of water, that water isn't moving or isn't continuing to go. And I think that once a poet that was quiet finds their voice within poetry, the floodgates open, and you end up just pouring this out. And the American language, there's a difference between a poet and like an English major, you know. There's all of these rules and things like that, but poets are made to break the rules and come to maybe a better understanding, you know, to help feel like poets, you know, allow people to understand. And when you use different metaphors within it, you can make everybody, you know, you can write something that makes everybody feel the understanding rather than just maybe know the understanding or hear the understanding. You know, when you can use a metaphor in such a great way, it's like, you know, you can, the person can just feel it. And so I was born to this confusion. You know, the creativity of style, you know, it's almost like English in a lot of ways can be at times almost like in the way that it's like math, where it's like really, this is exactly the way this is done. This is the way this, you know, this is reword this, reword that. And the confusion and the wildness is the river is what the poet enjoys. And when they find that, that's where they belong. So I thought that this was a great write, Tom, and very well done.
Thank you.
Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is definitely a great write. I like the metaphor of the river and how it's like a different river as time passes by. And I like how this is about the change of language and understanding, but you know, also kind of the change of the perspective. I really like the first two parts talk about be quiet, about silence, and you know, gives me thoughts to how some people are so uncomfortable with silence. Like they don't know how to communicate with it. They don't know how to just appreciate it for what it is. I do like where you say the American language confuses me, too many rules with too many exceptions. And that is true. You know, the American English has some of the funniest spellings and exceptions, and you can get just completely baffled. But I like what Faziana and Dexter both had to say about how there's always, too, a change in, you know, like the slang language. I remember when my son was a young teenager, and I took him and his friend out to for ice cream, and they were talking about girls, and they started talking about this one girl and calling her thick, and I'm like, well, that's not nice. They're like, no, thick is good. And okay. It was like that moment in Back in the Future where the professor was like, well, wait a minute, you mean bad is good? It's like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But no, I think this is absolutely a wonderful expression of language and trying to understand each other, but it not always working. So excellent right here, Tom.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great piece, Tom, and thank you for joining us here this evening. Faziano, what did you think, or you already commented first. We're on to the next one.
Sorry.
I'm losing my language here.
This one is by Ike Peter Usch, and it's called Maturity. My mind mold mildly. 17 years I ward away kindly. Now I fling open the gates of earth, craving to embrace all her threat. My heart heaves heavily on my chest. I has grown to pursue my societal rest. Now I stand to groom my age, laying away to withstand its rage. My brain battles batteredly in the breeze, fighting for fervent desires and timely increase. Marking all steps to confront the world I belong and to fight my way all day long. End poem.
Great read of Faziana and great write. Ike Peter. Let's go, Pam. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I really like this one. I think he's done a wonderful job of capturing the spirit of a 18-year-old man, or like, you know, just because you're basically 18 is that age where you become an adult, you know, you're going to be going out on your own, like, and it depends on the family and stuff, you know, there are variants, but for the most part, 18 is that age where the reality hits you, but you're still like, it seems like, you know, like just the day before you were a minor. And I like how he captures the as he says, the rage. It's almost that, you know, not quite knowing what to do with one's mind and one's body, I like how he says that my brain battles badly in the breeze, fighting the fever and desires and timely increase. There's this idea wanting to act responsibly, wanting to be an adult, but at the same time, like, wanting to, like, sow your wild oats, wanting to prove your strength. There's definitely the idea of an inner conflict that I think is quite normal, and a lot of people go through it as they enter into young adulthood. So I thought this was very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Tom, can we go to you for comment?
Yeah, I like the way he sort of, I mean, the first line, my mind mold mildly. 17 years I ward away kindly. And now I fling open the gates of her, craving to embrace all her threats. It's like he has been in a cocoon, getting ready, and now he's doing the bursting forth from the cocoon, and it flows in really nicely in that whole description in the second verse, which to me is sort of the pivot and heart of the whole piece in a lot of ways, about, you know, standing ready to take on the universe, knowing that he is still not quite finished, you know, now I stand to groom my age. And that it's interesting that he sees it not as something that he's going to slide into gracefully, but something where he's going to have to battle and fight and see a way to step past everything to make his way. It's a really strong, vibrantly masculine piece in its entire expression. It's interesting, the name Maturity for the poem, and yet in so many ways he speaks about the beginning of being a man. Very interesting piece. Very good.
Great comment there, Tom. You know, and yeah, he captures that age very well. And I like the part that you pointed out. You know, now I stand to groom my age, laying to withstand its rage, you know, making the steps to confront the world I belong and to fight my way all day long. You know, it is a very, as a world filled with rage where you have to fight your way. You know, and now I'm getting to the point where my goal and everything in life has become what's the least fight or whatever, the path of least resistance. So it's all in these different different waves and things that you kind of go in, and that's why it captures that age so well, because you do feel like you want to take on the world, you know, and you're naive about the how it's going to go, you know, and so. And the battles and the dumb people that you encounter all along the path that just wear on you, you know. But I think that this was a great piece. Faziana, what did you think about this?
I like it. It has that coming of age, like you said, it's that when you're young and like ready to take on the world, but you're no longer a child and you realize that you have to, you know, step up. I really liked grown to pursue my societal rest. It's like, you know, not just find your place in the world, but to also, you know, make a difference, that idealism at that age, and recognizing that you're going to have to work with it, work for it. I liked fighting for fervent desires and timely increase. There's a few places here with lots of alliteration, but I think fighting for fervent is the part that really hits the best. Just having to fight for your place in the world and fight to be a part of things. Now, I'm curious, because this says it was written 8 years ago, it was a pre-write. I wonder how he's changed since then. Since that time when he's first feeling like now is the time to mature, what it's like once he's been matured, that's something I'm curious about.
Great comment. What do we have here next?
We have one by Jer Azur. Can you please read that, Dexter?
Absolutely. Jerea Zur, this is a gift for Faziana. Truly, you are sharing the world with a smile, moving forward like a battle. True is she. Truly, she is so beautiful to share her worlds with us, and we are a glorious generation to make smile. Thank you for all your effort to make a life beautiful for us. We share, too, with you. Laughter and joy, for we are many you gifted. Thank you, making a generation to smile. Happy birthday to you and your crown, a success you will become. Thank you. Beautiful gift will come to you on your successes, and we shall cheer together, you. End poem. Well, that was a very, very kind and very nice thing to do, to be able to write a personal one for you. Tom, could we start with you on comments?
Okay. She's really making an effort to me, in a sense, to say two things. One, it's a joy to have you here. It's been a gift for all the time you spent getting to this point, and we look forward to the joy you'll bring us as you move forward from this point. as well as just thank you for all your effort to make life beautiful for us. And we share to you the laughter and the joy. Just you are a gift in who you are, as you are. It's lovely to hear, you know. I would think I'd be blushing if somebody read this to me, but I think it's a wonderful thing to have someone share with you. You should feel deeply appreciative.
Great comment there, Tom. Yeah. You know, what a gift it is to be able to, you know, to write poetry, what a gift it has been to, you know, kind of have the poetry community that we do have on here. Thank you for all your effort to make life beautiful for us, you know, and then not only to be a part of the community and to share your gift, but then, you know, also then be able to take it a step further and kind of be putting on you know, whether you put on contests or whether you have a show like this or whatever, that you start then to take it a step further in your commitment to help poets and to help the community and to add to it, you know, because you felt gifted and you felt the joy of it, and now you want to begin to share more with the world, kind of as they put it here. And you know, it was a great piece for a birthday. I thought it was very touching. And it's just a great share for this evening. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is delightful, and it's just wonderful that she wrote this poem for Afasiana with the gift of words. And I like how she talks about, you know, how, you know, we can make each other smile. And I think this poem is a gift to Afasiana, but I also think that I like that it acknowledges that, you know, with her poetry, with her contest, you know, with her show and her positive attitude, you know, Afasiana passed on so many gifts to us. And, you know, I think this is very well done all the way through, but I do especially like that second to last stanza with the idea of sharing laughter and joy. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Faziana, do you want to say anything about this work?
Yeah, I think this is really touching. I truly appreciate it. I can't believe making a generation to smile. I mean, I don't think I've reached a whole generation, but certainly that would be amazing. And if I've made anyone smile, I feel like that's sort of my mission. It's like every day I want to make at least one person smile. So this makes me feel like I have, which is really a nice feeling. I just think this is super sweet and kind, and thank you so much.
Yes, great piece. I'm sure you make the kids that you're reading your stories at the library, I'm sure you make them smile. So.
Yes, they're why I love my job.
Yeah, there you go. Making the generation to smile. So he captured it.
Mhm. Awesome. Pam, would you read the poem by Daniel Descino, please?
I would be happy to. Ageless by Daniel Descino. Age of years is as confusing to me as the concept of time. I have been 50 and felt like I was 10. I have been 20 and felt like I was 50. Many days I feel like I'm 90. Most days the mind is one age and the body another. Each day is a gift, a birthday of awakening, greatest present I can ever get, each one greater. Every year seems like a miracle. Decades become hard to comprehend. I can't even remember my 30s. I wish I could, I wish I paid attention. I am not as much a time traveler as a collector of history, and I flicker through all that has been as a candle in a crosswind, and wherever I am now, just a phase I and me that once was will think about someday. The only hope there ever is that it will be a good memory and poem.
Great read there, Pam. Yeah, I as always, you know, I love Daniel Jashino's writing in Ageless, you know, and he really brings out the concept of, you know, age is kind of almost just a number, and it's all, you know, our perception in our mind. And, you know, I've been 50 and felt like I was 10. We, you know, I think that we've all been there and getting excited. And a lot of times it's when you're around a younger child, you know, sometimes you can like transform yourself into that, you know, youthful feeling. You know, nobody gets excited like a kid does, you know, but when you see that happen, you can feel it then too. Most days the mind is one age and the body is another, and that's exactly right. You know, decades have been hard to comprehend. I really, you know, you can really relate to that, because it's just impossible to wrap your mind around, you know, how long we've come, how long we have, you know, to go. It's just almost unthinkable and you know, describable. I wish I would have paid attention. And I like to play on words, a phase. I thought that that was a very clever part to tie in. But I really enjoyed this piece, and I thought it was very well done. Faziana, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it as well. And, yeah, I like how it talks about you can feel different ages than you are. I mean, I definitely experienced that. Sometimes I am very childish, and then sometimes I feel very old. Mostly it's like my mind is very childish and my body is very old. Many days I feel like I'm 90. Uh-huh. But, yes, there is this kind of realization that you aren't stuck necessarily in your physical age, that you can, like you said, when Dexter, when you're hanging out with younger people, sometimes you can pick up that energy. I definitely feel that when I'm spending time with my nephews, with the kids at work. I mean, I think that's partly why I like working with kids, is because I for a moment can feel like one and share that wonder with them as they get so excited about little things. I really liked the part that said, I flicker through all that has been as a candle in a crosswind, because it's not like you can just necessarily remember exactly what happened, but you can kind of get flashes of what that was. He talks about something near the end where it's like something that who he was and the future him will look back on this, and recognizing that, like, you know, just try to make the moment good now, because that is what you're going to be looking back on. Yeah, and then his AN is really sweet too. So thank you, Daniel.
Great comment. And Pam, could we go to you for comment?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I really like this all the way through. It's great observations, a very thoughtful write. I thought the title Ageless was a great choice. Definitely relatable, because I too have had that where, like, on days the mind feels one age and the body feels another, or, you know, you don't really feel a set age. I like when he goes into the idea of, I can't even remember my 30s. I wish I could. I wish I paid attention. You know, the idea that during our 20s, 30s, we're living life so fast, we're so busy with things that we don't take time to just stop and appreciate the moments. You know, and he does that very well in the end where he says, you know, the only hope there ever is it will be a good memory. That idea of, you know, taking time to just look around you, observe what's going on, take it in, because someday it's going to be a memory and hopefully it's going to be a good one. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Tom, let's finish comments with you.
I'm absolutely with him about the whole, you know, you feel one way and your body feels another. I'm definitely along with that. But also, I think the oldest I ever felt was when I was 10, and then I felt like I was about 110. It's funny, you know, how much, heck, I get up in the morning and look in the mirror, and I'm still trying to figure out who that guy is that looks back at me. This just sort of catches so beautifully all the different ways we contend with time, because it doesn't really make any sense, because so much of who we are, how we are, and who we be and what we be is in the moment and how we feel in that moment. And then trying to relate to time makes no sense at all. But I love his idea that, you know, you, in a sense, we live our lives and not have any regrets. You know, there ever is that it will be a good memory. Absolutely. You know, may they all be good memories. These bad ones really suck. Tremendously.
Great comment there, Tom. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I have another one up here by Blue Leader One. Tom, if I could get you to read that one.
Certainly. For A, on her birthday, I saw a video. Some scientists held up a teaspoon filled with sperm. Said there was enough there to populate the whole Earth. Billions of potential people made me think of being born. I was there, but I have no memory of it, which is, I am sure, a good thing. I mean, I wouldn't want to remember being in the room, even though I was alive then. An acquaintance was talking about their birthday, freaking out, asking, what have I done with my life? Am I where I should be? Who am I? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I admit, I chuckled a little. Who hasn't done that on their B-day? But then I pulled a dick move, did the worst thing a person could do, which is I gave advice, pointed out the bullshit of it all, and recommended reading Ecclesiastes of all things, because I forgot that reflecting on our path in life is part of the birthday fun. If I could go back in time, probably would say nothing. Or maybe I would say the human condition is your heritage and your right. So have at it. Have all the fun in whatever forms that your soul can take. You deserve it. Happy birthday. And poem.
Excellent read. And my mouth is full, so Dexter, can you start the comments, please?
Well, that's a strange comment to make depending on this poem. So, but yes, yeah, so I will start this one out. You know, I didn't know where this poem was going once he said that the scientist held up a teaspoon filled with sperm. you know, I was like, but then once he said that, it kind of, you know, blew my mind a little bit just thinking about that fact about the billions of potential people in there. And, you know, this is almost a Roe versus Wade kind of piece, you know. You don't have any recollection or any remembrance of that, you know. But I just, you know, I really related to this about, you know, the worst thing is that you give advice, and I catch myself doing that at times and going, God, I should have just shut up, you know, and going back and, you know, but I thought that this was a great piece here and very well done.
Thank you, Dex. And it was nothing naughty in my mouth, by the way. It was, well, I mean, maybe calorie-wise.
I'm
but
joking.
I know. My husband made this chicken corda bleu casserole that is amazing. So our timing was a bit off tonight, and I'm eating during the show.
That's fine.
I thought this was a nice poem. She had, actually, I don't know if it's a she. They had sent me a message personally before, and then they're referencing it here, the advice and stuff like that. That it's, I think, based on the message that they sent me before. But I wasn't angry about it or upset or anything about the message that was sent before. So Blue Leader 1, don't worry. I was not upset about the original message. And I think this is nice. And I like the ending idea of, you know, embracing the human condition and having fun in whatever way. Even yeah, okay. I'm going to stop there because Dex has my mind going in dirty ways. So, Pam, what did you think?
Well, it definitely was very interesting the way it started and the idea of life on Earth. And, you know, I do like the ending, the idea of just learning to have fun and relax and, you know, just enjoy the as it says, the human condition. Have all the fun in whatever forms that your soul can take. You deserve it. Happy birthday. Those are wonderful lines. So nicely written and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And Tom, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
Oh, I had fun because it was my poem that gave you fun. So I do know couple of people who claim to remember what it was like in the womb. I don't know whether they're full of BS or not, because I had nothing to compare it against. Besides, the older you get, sometimes the bigger the stories become. I love the line about not giving advice and how they made it sound like they were being terribly pompous. Very nicely developed and then reinforced. I mean, you know, as a therapist, I learned to never give advice. I just repeated back what people said, but made it sound like I was saying it to, you know, to them. And they always thought it sounded very, very wise. It shows you that people are a lot smarter than they think they are. But I thought it was delightful.
Totally. I just had my last bite. What are we going to do next?
Well, that's nice that he's a professional chef. That means that you can kind of just spend the night at home rather than go, oh, where are we going to go out to eat? He can just make it happen, huh, at the house. So that's a plus. So what we have here next is one by Kit Duddy, and if I could get Pam to read that.
Absolutely. Leaving Home by Kit Duddy. When must the child and adult become, divest themselves of dad and mom, shoulder the burden of decisions to make, planning of life, direction to take, do they cast off those shackles held fast to their hearts, listening to advice their mother imparts, or impatience abounding, go to hell in a cart? Most like myself, quietly step out the door, taking memories and necessities for the want of some more, and the fears wish an opening to fall through the door, home.
This is a beautiful poem, and I should note that we are now on to the other contest. The birthday contest is all out of rights. So this one is in response to some art by Lisa Locke Nielsen, and the painting that inspired it is a young girl holding a house, maybe a toy house, maybe a shrunken house, as she walks through a field of flowers, and she looks quite serious. It's called Leaving Home. The painting itself is called Leaving Home, as well as the poem. So I thought this had a tone that really fits the tone of the painting. The idea of casting off the shackles and kind of going out on your own, because she's holding that piece of home with her, but she is kind of facing the world here. I liked taking memories and necessities for the want of some more, and I think that really captures what the girl is doing in this painting. I thought it was beautifully worded and really suited the prompt. Dex, what did you think?
Well, at first I was like, holy shit, this person really knows you. You know, I'm going to come up with a poem called, like, Leaving Home as the birthday one, and then to go in depth like this, I'm like, I thought, damn, that's a presumptuous birthday poem. I forgot, I didn't even realize we moved on from that. So when the child becomes an adult, divest themselves of mom and dad, you know, you have to, like the little bird being kicked out of the nest, you know, it's about shouldering the burden of the decisions that you make. You know, this is a brilliant right. And the fears wish an opening to fall through the door. You know, there's a lot of fear that goes in with that also as well. But it's a fantastic piece, and I think it captures a lot of that, and I just really enjoyed it. It really, really was fitting for the prompt.
You know, I agree. And I think what you did, Dex, is jump ahead in the list, because Blue Leader 1 wrote for both contests. So you went after her next one. That's why you got confused about the prompts.
Okay, there you go.
Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, this had a really nice flow to it. And I like that it's about that time period when a child, a young adult, is just leaving home. You know, and the decision to move forward and how to go with it, you know. I like that he brings up the different ways. Like sometimes, you know, when mothers are offering up or parents are offering up advice, you know, we get impatient with them, thinking we know everything at that young age. And, you know, and there's this idea of just really wanting to be your own person, wanting to be completely free, casting off those shackles. But there's also, I like how he touches on that, the idea of how, you know, no matter how bold and brave somebody acts, you know, when they're leaving home and how much they act like they know everything, there's this part of them that feels overwhelmed, that has those fears, and just wants to be swallowed up, you know, into, you know, just not have to go out into that world and face everything alone. And so I think there's a strong emotional impact, especially with those end lines. And it's very well done.
Agreed. And what is our next poem, Dexter?
Okay. I'm going to come back to the Daniel and Blue Leader one, since we did just read them. Let's go here with Stephen T. Wellman. Who just read that last one?
I think Pam.
Yes, it was me.
Okay. All right. One second here. I think my dog just caught a bug or something on the floor. Because all of a sudden she started just going crazy. But, all right. Oh, yeah, she did. Got a spider. All right. All right, where was I? I'm going to read this one by Stephen T. Wellman. Get her, Bailey. All right. Charred. I was young, but I remember. I remember the home fires, the hot ticking temper, your dismal disposition, seared maddening. Melancholic memories, eternally etched in an 8-year-old. Your bruises, burned bridges, any future we may have had. The hellacious fury discolored every innocent, reaping recollection. My childhood selfishly scorched, buried beneath the blackened eggshells. I reluctantly walked on every day. Charred remnants remain. Ghoulish ghosts haunt out of grim gray ash. My life grew, despite having burning ears from searing strong rebuke. It did not win. I was stronger. And like the phoenix, I did rise. Poem.
Beautiful read, and wonderful poem, Stephen. I thought this was a perfect response to the prompt. So the prompt image was, again, by Lisa Lack-Nielsen. It's called Water for My Garden, but she does not have a garden. It's a young girl who holds a watering can, and her dollhouse, or at least a miniature house, is on fire. But she looks pretty calm. Standing by some flowers, having the water can prepared so she can put out that fire if she needs to. And I think that he captured that really well, using it as a metaphor, where the home fire is not like a hearth to go home to and feel good by. It is a hot temper. I think that he used just really great words all throughout. Seared, where is it there? There's the blackened eggshells that shows that they have, faced that fire. And the idea of having to get away from that hellacious fury of what I think is an abusive parent in this situation. The way that impacted the child, having to deal with those fires when they shouldn't have had to. The ash that life grew out of despite those burning years. It didn't win. He was a phoenix who came out of the fire. And I think that shows incredible strength. And just a fabulous write, excellent word choices, and harrowing story that really matches the prompt. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a powerful and emotive write. I like, again, the one-word title that fits in perfectly, charred. I have to agree with you that, you know, wonderful word choices. I like how he took this in metaphorical direction, as you were saying, the burning house being the temper. You know, and this is one of those, and one of those rites, as we've talked about before, where you like the rite, but the topic is so difficult. But I like that he approaches this in a raw, gritty way, and, you know, and puts it out there. Because, you know, there are children that have gone through this. There are children that, you know, are going through it at this moment. Your bruises burned bridges to any future we may have had. I thought that was a really powerful line, and the idea that even as a child, you know that you want to get away. And it just pulls my heartstrings to see things like my childhood selfishly scorched, buried beneath blackened eggshells. I like that he uses that phrase, you know, walking on eggshells, but instead brings it to buried beneath blackened eggshells. And the thing is even as an adult, you hate to walk on eggshells, but you especially hate to see a child have to go through something like that. But definitely a powerful ending in the idea that this person, you know, made something of themselves. You know, they gave themselves a strong spirit and moved forward. So brilliant, right, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great piece. You know, charred. Yes, this is filled with, you know, difficult subject matter. It's filled with a lot of sadness. But you know how the end is very enriching, and the story of the phoenix. You know, I just love the wording that he uses throughout this and the imagery that he gives us. I just really enjoyed this piece. And with that being said, hey, Naomi, good to see you. Paziana, could you read the next piece that we have?
We actually have an audio for it, so I'm going to play that.
Liquor and Food Stamps by G.A. Graham. These things burn, much like your hot breath. After your last failed attempt to drown away our world, our last diligence was denied that day. The rare thing it was, even you could not find a bottle big enough. I remember days of hunger, the gnawing ache with its roars, and how even it eventually succumbed to the indifference of this place. The place you helped build, the one we called home, where dreams dared not tread. Was it your fourth grade education, perhaps your thirst, that most shaped our lives? Or was it just one fall too many? I remember when you ran away the first time, Mother, making me a father to a six-year-old girl. I found a quarter. She fell in love with frozen Kool-Aid that week. But you came back. You always did, eventually. Did you ever notice, each time you returned, that more and more of you was missing? Scorched away, cauterized from our lives?
Wow. Sorry, I was speechless at the end there. This is incredible. So touching and just emotional powerhouse, but also worded in such an like eloquent way. The way that it describes the relationship with the mother is just it's blowing me away. And the wondering about like why the mother is the way that she is, the lack of education, the alcoholism, the when it says one fall too many, I'm thinking like maybe like post-concussion syndrome, where you, you know, having head injury can definitely change someone's temper and ability to function, and the having to take care of his sister, and the idea that Kool-Aid was like all that they had is just so sad. But the ending is really powerful. The idea that every time she came back, more of her was missing, scorched away, cauterized from our lives. That is such an amazing stanza right there. Wow. The AN says, even though those days burned down the idea of what I called home, they also watered and strengthened my relationship with my sister. What an intense and beautiful poem. Like Pam said, it's a little bit odd complimenting a poem that's so full of pain. So I'm sorry if this was your experience, and I'm proud of how you've turned that pain into art. And again, it fit the prompt just perfectly. I love when people manage to infuse their own, style and essence into a poem while still connecting with what the prompt is. So it's amazing. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great piece, and the AN brought it clarity. I wasn't, I was bouncing back and forth on whether this was a family member or perhaps, you know, his relationship with another woman. But this one just is stunning. And how it even eventually, you know, the place you helped build and one called a home where dreams dared not tread. Was it your fourth grade education? You know, I remember when you ran away, you know, and it's just the bond that you make over these trials and tribulations and I think that, you know, once you start to get to know somebody that's like this, you think about how different they are, but then also sometimes you start to recognize how similar you are, because we're all searching for something. And it's just about whether or not you can recognize that. But the way that it ended is just, like you said, it was stunning. And I thought that the SoundCloud was amazing and very well done.
Yes, I meant to comment on the SoundCloud too. We've been fortunate that G.A. Grimm's been giving us SoundClouds for many of my contests, and I absolutely love the SoundCloud, so keep that up, please. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is, I love the SoundCloud. I love the way he expresses the pain so beautifully. And I think the AN definitely added to the strength of the poem when he mentions, you know, how it strengthened his relationship with his sister. And oftentimes that happens, you know, we have siblings that we go through difficult times with. It does strengthen the relationship, especially if a parent abandons or, you know, leaves them alone together. I mean, all the way through, this is an amazing write. You know, and I like, too, the part where, you know, he's trying to figure out, because sometimes we just want to know why, even if it's not going to change anything, like why were they the way they were, you know, and so oftentimes, you know, the idea that we want to at least know that, you know, there was something that got in the way of them being a normal, loving, functioning parent. And I have to say, I really liked that ending, and especially the use of the word cauterized. More and more of you was missing, scorched away, cauterized from our lives, because, you know, the cauterization, there's not only the cutting off of, there's the healing. You know, there's nothing's going to be put back the way it was. So just a brilliant write and very well done.
I agree. Well said. Dexter, what do we have next?
If I could get you to read the next one by Jessna.
Sure. Jessna Sajan, Trapped. My house is too tiny for me. Big for me as a child, hard for me as an adult. Hard for me as an adult to see my toys taken by cousins. Gray clouds by eventide, mother and father missing, brother playing with friends, thunder doomsday sounded. Scared of the thunder outside, too loud, hot to handle. Lightning sparks intervals, wildfire strikes, screams heard. Morning sounded death calls. Fall began bloodied mass, lifeless bodies in coffins, mass funerals, sound bells. My house, my haven, finding bigger shelter house, bigger animals crowding me, scared of the world outside. Show me a house for me. Let me leave this tiny house. Find me a meadow, a countryside, greener than the dark world of mine. End poem. And I do want to say that this was to the next prompt, which is another painting by Lisa Lach Nielsen called Finding Shelter. And it has a girl kind of squished into a house that sort of looks like it's made out of a cardboard box dollhouse. And like her head reaches the ceiling, and she has to be all like holding her knees and scrunched up to be able to get into the house. So I think that she took that metaphor very well, made it work for her poem. And it's, you know, it's quite the shocking with the violence there of the coffins and the mass funerals and like so much going on, and that longing for a home, for a house that feels safe. Find me a meadow, a countryside, greener than the dark world of mine. That's just very sad, but beautifully expressed. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this, I have to agree, beautifully expressed. It's interesting to me how this poem just kept getting darker and darker. Like, you know, at the first stanza, you have somebody who obviously is in young adulthood where they're no longer playing with their toys, but they still have those fond memories and connections to their toys, and they don't want to see them taken by their cousins. And then you get the storm outside, and I like how almost like the storm outside could be like a metaphor for everything that's going on in the family. And then, as you mentioned, all of a sudden there's this idea of mass, you know, morning sounded death calls, fall began bloody mass, lifeless bodies in coffins, mass funerals, sound of bells. All of a sudden we're just surrounded by death, and not just one person died, like a grandmother died. You know, it's all around there's death. It almost makes you think it's the idea of somebody who lives in an area where there is a lot of conflict. And, you know, I like in that end that, there's that idea of wanting to escape, wanting to move on to a world in life where there's a sense of peace and a sense of being able to breathe. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Agreed. And Dexter, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I thought that this was a powerful piece. You know, scared of the thunder outside, too loud, hot to handle. The metaphor and the imagery in this one was just very telling. My house, my haven, finding bigger shelter house, bigger animals crowding me, scared of the world outside. You know, it is a scary world outside. And I think that her imagery really showed that throughout, you know, and I think that the problem sometimes now, you know, the problem now is that we have the TV on in our phone and we get to see how scary the world is outside. Sometimes that can add to it, you know, the madness that we feel. But this is a poem of you know, I think showcasing a great deal of anxiety, and I really liked it. I guess that's a weird thing to say, too, but, you know, like we're saying, I really do enjoy the piece. Okay, here, the next one that we have here is for Pam, and it's called Panic Room. We'll post it now.
All right. Let me find that, and there we go. Panic Room by Kenny W. She is safe now, hidden away, her doll's house bringing temporary security. Sometimes the outside is just a little too scary, demons and men having their way. The fetal position nurtures and protects, the surround walls evil rejects. No bruises today, no handling or worse. Luca nervously smiles, having lifted the curse. Can the child survive crammed in this place? Will she have to come out the world to face? What kind of life for children and youth when what they face is downright abuse? End poem.
Well, this is certainly another sad one. Thank you for that read, Pam. So this is to the same prompt of the girl smushed into the little house. And I like that it was interpreted as hiding within her dollhouse, like not physically, but to be in that world of dolls, to role play and use your imagination as an escape from what's really happening. So to be in her dollhouse is to mentally be in a home that is the way that she wants it to be, that she can control the life that those dolls have and make it a positive one. So, you know, it's very sad that the child needs to do that, but I think Kenny W. did a wonderful job at changing the painting into a meaningful poem. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great piece, and I liked what you had to say about it, about being able to manipulate in the dollhouse, bringing, I guess it says here, that temporary security that we don't have outside. I like the fetal position, nurtures and protects. I didn't even, you know, kind of make that connection. And they really captured this painting so well. You know, you can picture the painting almost without even looking at it just by reading it. And I think that that's a skill. So I thought that this was a great piece.
And Pam, you read it for us beautifully. Would you also like to comment?
Absolutely. This was another write that was powerful and emotive. It had a nice flow to it. You know, it's so difficult to live in a world where a child has to feel they have to find a way to protect themselves, even if it is only in their own head. You know, and he really captured well this the prompt, or you know, wrote well off of it. But you're right. This is one of those poems that stands alone. I also like in his AN that he mentions that he used the name Luca, you know, from the Susan Vegas song of the same name. I thought that was a clever reference to use that name and reference that song. You know, wonderful write all the way through, but oh my goodness, the fetal position nurtures and protects. The surround walls evil rejects. No bruises today, no handling or worse. Luca nervously smiles, having lifted the curse. There's that idea that of that false sense of security and hope, but that it's so needed in the moment, because for a mind to have to constantly think of the abuse that has happened or is possibly going to happen and most likely going to happen again in the future is just too much for a child. So just an excellent write and very well done.
I agree. Dexter, what's happening next?
I will give the next one a read. It's called Nomad by Daniel Ticino. And it goes like this. Nomad. I think. Humans have created AI. Does it think it thinks? I don't remember life before words, and now they are my thoughts, and so am I. I am them. Even home in practicality is a definition. I refer to it sometimes when I'm speaking to the other programmable, mobile, carnage-fueled, psychotic apes, and they understand me. But home is a feeling only the occupant knows. The house I live in, it's just a house. When my family is gone, I feel at home behind a drum kit. I belong there. I walk into work, and I am welcome. And for all the places I find throughout my daily journeys, my belief of home I carry deep within, comfort and security. This in small items that I carry, and the choices unconscious. The people that I smile at when strangeness is around. And there are times when house turns home, turns sanctuary, turns hideout, turns secret cave. Beyond worldly eyes. Heard the phase safety in numbers. I think it's the number one. When I have comfort, when I have peace, and when I dream. The dreams of past youth brings reality lessons. So I dream of real with hope to merge both worlds. I dream of gardens and the harvest to come. Mostly of gardening skills I carry. Like the skill of home is the nomad's home. Home lives within, through days, through life, through space and time. Home is just a strange abstraction in my daily, spontaneous, temporary, nomadic life. End poem.
All right. That was a wonderful poem, Daniel. And I should say that this is to the first prompt within the art contest. So that was the one where the girl was carrying the house. And I think that this concept of being a nomad works so well for it because home is something that is adaptable and people see it differently. I mean, sometimes to me, home is, you know, my home here with my husband, but I can also refer to going home when I'm thinking about, like, going to visit my family in Ontario. That will always be home to me in some ways. being with close friends. I'm part of this reenactment group, and when we're all camping together and singing around the fire, like, that feels like home. So I think the feeling of home that you carry around, depending on where you feel connected and safe, I think he captures that very well here. When he talks about how he feels at home behind a drum kit, it's like that sense of belonging, like you found your place. I was really amused by the line, when I'm speaking to the other programmable mobile carnage-fueled psychotic apes. that was a great line. The idea that, you know, your house can be your home because it provides, you know, sanctuary, a hideout, a place where you can be comfortable, where you can dream, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a house that provides this safety. But home moves with you. Home is a strange abstraction, he says. And I really like that he recognizes that. It's a very philosophical piece. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, definitely a philosophical piece. And I, too, really got a kick out of that part about, I refer to it sometimes when I'm speaking to the other programmable mobile carnage-fueled psychotic apes. And I like that he starts out with the question, humans have created AI, does it thinks? You know, delves into the science fiction realm, and actually quite the reality, almost from the reality realm of how far can we take artificial intelligence. And you know, I like that, to me, this becomes the idea that, you know, home is a state of mind. You can just be just at home with people as you can be, you know, with yourself. And I like that, you know, being a drummer, he mentions that he feels at home behind his drums. And, you know, then the idea that when he mentioned spontaneous temporary nomadic life, I thought that was a wonderful ending. You know, reminding us that no matter what we call home, this life is temporary, you know, and, you know, just an amazing thought-provoking write, as always, and very well done.
You know, sometimes poems are so thought-provoking that it's like, now this could be a prompt for another thing, and then the response to that could become a prompt to another. I feel like all poetry could just be like a jumping off each other's poem inspiration extravaganza.
Oh, definitely.
I guess it's one of the great things about having this online community, I guess. You can be inspired by other people. Recently, someone wrote a comment on one of my poems, and it became, I'm like, you know what, we need to just post this together. Because it was one where I was kind of playing in a darker way with, like, the Disney princesses, and I was like, call me Ariel because I've given up my voice. Like, and, you know, things like that. Call me Aurora because I just want to sleep my life away. Or, like, I don't know. But then he responded with, like, call me Eric because I'll take the ship to save you. Call me whatever because, like, he did the Beast. He did I can't remember Prince Charming's name in the Aurora one. But, like, he responded to all the different elements of it. And I was just like, yes, this is how we should be commenting on each other's poems. Like, make a new poem out of it. And I just, I don't know, I love the way that it sprung off of things. So I'm like, we should all do this more. I like the idea of collaborating. So I'm going to just start commenting more elaborately on people's poems. This is my goal. Dex, what's up?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one by Daniel. And the one that you guys pointed out, you know, I think that what, you know, it brings in and introduces the idea of, you know, us almost being AI in a way. You know, it goes, does it, you know, does it think? And then you start to think about the way that we are shaped and we are molded. When he's, you know, when he says programmable, mobile, carnage fueled, psychotic apes, it's like we are very programmable to surround, which is kind of like AI. And what sets us apart is we have a soul. And I think that we're within our soul is in the same place that, or, you know, a branch or the tree with the branch off of the, you know, a home is a branch off of that tree, I should say. You know, I think that within our soul, or like, you know, what I guess what our concept of what a soul is kind of where we find home and how it feels, I think. I don't necessarily know if an artificial intelligence would ever feel, can ever feel the feeling of what a home is without being programmed to it. So he does a good contrast here of what separates us as people. And I just thought that this was a fantastic write.
I agree.
Okay, we have this next one here by Blue Leader One, and if you could give that a read.
In the Early Hours of Cold, by Blue Leader One. When I left home, my mom tried to stop me at the door. She stood in my way. I had to force her, if carefully, to the side, so I could squeeze past and out. I flew down the stairs and up the street. She followed me in flip-flops in her nightgown. Down the boulevard, I saw my bus. I quickly calculated that if I waited there, there would be a scene. So I ran on to the next stop, hoping she wouldn't get on the bus. Then I would be stuck. She followed me heedlessly. The bus passed her, and I got on. I made my way to the very back and saw her still running after me. It's the last time I clearly remember breaking her heart. Now, I wish I could go back. Go back in time. Back into my young soul. Go back into my bones, back into my skin, to the lips I had then, and kiss and comfort her. I wish I could go home. Home is gone. There is no way there. There never will be, no matter how I howl. Now my heart is broken and breaks, again and again in pulses, to my mom. I'll meet you there with bundles of flowers in endless time. And Paul. Dexter, would you start the comments, please?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great piece. You know, it brings out that idea of, you know, you wish you could go back and just feel like that, you know. You know, you could go back to what the feeling was like. You miss the feeling of everything, and, you know, and back to my young soul, back to my old bones, and kiss and comfort her. You know, I wish I could go home. You know, I think that that's something that is difficult to recreate when you leave home. You know, I think that in a lot of ways, you know, that's what you spend kind of your adult life chasing or trying to find, you know, is trying to find, or, you know, your home of your own. But when it's difficult to do, I think that you miss that old time. So I thought that this was a great piece.
I interpreted it as her mother had just recently died, and she regretted the way that she treated her mother when she was younger, and wanting to go back in time to have opportunity to change things, to be kinder to her mother, to experience her. And part of that experience is physical, you know, to feel your skin, you know, the warmth of a hug, to feel your lips and know what it was to kiss her, to be in that moment. And I think some people for us, people who we care about the most, are home, and there's that feeling of loss when someone dies and you lose that sense of home. I mean, sometimes that can also be like, you know, if your family moves out of your old childhood home, you don't have that place to go back to anymore. My mother's uncle died a few months ago, and he had kind of been the one who, like, the extended family went to his house for reunions or special events or, like, anything, because he had a huge property. He was not wealthy by any means. It was, you know, out in the middle of nowhere and you know, not developed. When he passed away, it was sort of like, well, where do we go? And the land is still there, and his kids own it, but it's like he was the hub of all of the extended family. And I didn't know him very well because I moved away a long time ago, but I know my mom felt quite lost at the, like, even though, you know, she hasn't lived there in what, 20 years, the concept of home was connected to him. And I think for this person, home was connected to her mother, and she felt like she lost it. And one of the saddest times is when you are home, technically, you're in your house, and you find yourself thinking, I wish I could go home. And then it's like, this is home. You just don't have the kind of home that you're hoping for, that you feel right in. So I think this captured that really well. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, great observations there. I, too, took it as the idea that the mom had died, especially at that very last part. To my mom, I'll meet you there with bundles of flowers and endless time. But I do think there are also people whose parents or whose family rejects them and doesn't want to make peace with them. The beginning really spoke strongly on the idea of a young person who is ready to move on for whatever reason. I don't know if there was conflict going on in the house or what, but, you know, the idea of the mother, you know, just running down with her flip-flops and her nightgown, like, you can definitely see within those lines that the mother wasn't ready to let their child go. I like how then it goes, she has the word now all by itself. You know, like, sometimes you need that one single word, that one single line to work as a separator between the two parts. And then we look at the now with the idea of wanting to go back and you can't. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. So we are out of time for tonight. Thank you so much to Pam for calling in, to Dexter for being awesome as a host with me, to everyone who wrote in and shared your poetry with us, and to Phil for giving us this time on her station. So thank you, everyone, and I hope that you will write for more of our contests. Pam's show will be on very shortly, so stick around in half an hour. Thank you.